candlelight. The faint flickering gleam of 14 little candles shines forth into the world, bringing to a vast number of people some of the light of astral knowledge. The sunlight is waning. Coming fast is the end of day. The darkness of communism is by stealth and treachery engulfing the world faster and faster. Soon the light of freedom will be extinguished for a time while mankind ponders opportunities lost, and regrets warnings unheeded. But even in the darkest hour there shall be the gleams of little candles, bringing hope to a stricken world. The darkest hour is before the dawn, and that hour is not yet. The gloom and despondency of evil men usurping power shall be lessened by the knowledge that all suffering shall eventually pass, and the sunlight shall shine again. Candlelight may bring illumination to some, hope to others. Sunlight gives way to darkness, darkness gives way to sun, light, but even in the deepest dark a candle may show the way. 7. From an admirer. "You are old, Father Rampa," the young man exclaimed, "and the press for too long have you defamed. The candles you lit gleam both near and afar, sending out light like a welcoming star." "You are old, Father Rampa," the young man said. "Put aside your typing, it's time that you died. Your life has been hard and your experiences grim, but the candles you lit will never grow dim." "You are old, Father Rampa," the young man said. "Your candles will flame long after you are dead. The truths you have taught will enrich our way. The hardships you suffered, was it too much, Empe? Freed from suffering, freed from sorrow, freed from worries about tomorrow, freed from the toils of this bad earth, freed from the circle of endless rebirth, your life flame flickers and ends one day, but the candles you lit will show us the way. With apologies to all and everyone who merits an apology." 9. Chapter 1. The sullen clouds came lowering out of the steel sky and began to weep. A thin veil of pattering raindrops scudded across the dirty roofs of Montreal and ended up as rivulets of sooty black in the garbage-cluttered gutters. The tempo of the downpour increased, the swirling rainstorm blotted out the bridges, the tall, ugly buildings, and then even the port itself. Suddenly the trees leaned over, water pouring from depressed leaves, forming scummy puddles over the sparse grass. In the distance a ship hooted forlornly as though in despair at having again to enter Montreal, the city of two tongues. Glumly the cats sat before the fogged-up window and wondered if the sun would ever shine again. Outside on the flooded roadway, a tattered copy of a French-language newspaper blew to its rightful home in a sewer where it momentarily blocked the water flow and then vanished in a scurry of gurgling sound. The old blue bus went chuntering along, engine roaring, wheels flinging plumes of water from the flooded road. Came a crash as it dropped into the hollow by the office. Lurching and reeling, it pushed its cumbersome way through the murk and turned right, out of sound. There came the ponderous roar of the garbage truck pounding its way along the road. A behemoth shape glimpsed dimly through the unlighted gloom and then, peace, save for the drumming of the rain. The old man in the wheelchair groped for the light switch as he turned away from the steamed window. With the light on he turned sadly to the pile of letters yet to be answered. "Questions, questions, questions," he mumbled, "do they think I—" 11. "I'm a free advisory bureau on everything from conception death, with a good dose of the hereafter thrown in." The letter from the lady in a large USA city was interesting. "I have read all 13 of your books," she wrote. "A good author would have told all that and the more in one half chapter." "Gee, ma'am, well, thanks. But, here they come, a very, very cross women's lib gangster from Winnipeg. Doesn't like me a bit, thinks I hate women. Well, she is not a woman, anyhow, more like a drunken buck navvy from her language. Women? I love them. Men, and women, just the opposite sides of the coin. Why should I hate them? What a touchy lot some women are, though, phooey. But the minute minority do not matter. Most, about 99%, true, are sincerely interested in what I write and just love my candles. They want to know more about all aspects of metaphysics. How to levitate, how to teleport, how to do this and how to do that. Quite a number of people have become increasingly interested in dowsing and pendulums. There is a letter here from a person who saw a man talking across a field, and suddenly the forked stick which the man was holding twitched violently. The correspondent tells me that this person was a water diviner, and please would I say if there is anything in this business of dowsing and using a pendulum. Yes, most definitely dowsing is a genuine thing, if one knows how to use the hazel or other forked twig. Most definitely there is something in pendulums provided the person knows what he is or she is doing and is not just putting on a stage turn to impress the unwary. First, we have to know what causes these things to work. At the present time with radio commonplace it is not at all difficult to get over the idea that there are certain currents, or certain waves, which a person cannot detect without some intermediary. For example, about us all the time is a horrible commotion which, fortunately, we cannot hear, but radio waves are coming in from everywhere, AM, FM, long waves, short waves, high frequency, and ultra-high frequency. To the average human they might just as well not be there because without special apparatus or special conditions. 12. One just cannot perceive them. But, let us get a mysterious piece of equipment between the incoming waves and the loudspeaker or the television tube, and then we get noise or we get pictures. The mysterious piece of apparatus is connected usually to some substance, the aerial, which receives the incoming waves and then takes them to the interior of the mysterious box where all sorts of wires, bits of copper and the mica or paper, etc., sort out the jumble and detect a coherent signal. Then it passes on to another section of the box where it is amplified and its speed of frequency is reduced to that which can be dealt with. From the amplifier it goes to the output stage, and thence on to the speaker or to a television tube and speaker, and then we get something which approximates more or less to the original noise which was broadcast, or to the original picture which was broadcast. Of course, that is oversimplifying rather dreadfully because in addition to having the incoming signals we have to have a method of collecting the signals, detecting the signals, amplifying them, and putting them to output. But, and we must not forget this, we have to have a method of tuning to the frequency or wavelength to which we desire to listen or watch. Radio and dowsing are very much the same. The signals we receive in dowsing, let's forget all about dowsing. Shall we? Actually, unless a person is going to douse for water only out in the blue yonder there is no point in having hazel twigs, aluminium twigs, or all sorts of wonderful glorified versions of hazel twigs. It is much better and much more convenient to use a pendulum which does everything a dowsing rod can do, and much more. So let us just refer to pendulums because, unless you are a farmer in the wildest part of Australia where you can perhaps cut a suitable twig at any moment, there is no point in cluttering yourself with a lot of lumber. A pendulum is a lump of material attached to something which will not constrict its movements. A little later we will discuss different types of pendulums, but basically the radiations which can be indicated by a pendulum are radiations in some way similar to radio. They are radiations transmitted by all and every material as it decomposes, or gets ready to change. 13th state. We know, for example, that throughout countless years radium decays into lead. We know that all matter is a whole horde of molecules hopping about like fleas on a hot plate. The smaller the fleas the faster they can jump, the bigger the fleas the slower and more cumbersome. So it is with material. Everything has its atomic number, number of atoms indicating how slowly it is going to vibrate, or how fast it is going to vibrate. So all we do in pendulum work is to tune into some atomic vibrations, and, if we know how, we can tell which one it is and where it is. When we are dealing with radio we have an aerial system which absorbs or attracts or intercepts, call it what you like, the waves coming through the atmosphere. Perhaps they are bounced back by the Heaviside layer or the Appleton layer. But in addition, there is a ground wire which makes contact with the ground wave, because you must have two, positive and negative, in everything. You can take the ground wave as negative and the air wave as positive. So in the matter of pendulums, the human body collects the air wave, acting as the antenna or aerial, and the feet in contact with the ground act as the earth connection, or ground. And for correct pendulum work, it is necessary to keep the balls of the feet on the ground unless one uses another method of tapping the earth current. Of course, using a pendulum is simplicity itself. It is even simpler than simplicity if we know why a thing works. That is why you are getting this long collection of words which might at first strike you as rigmarole. It's not. Until you know what you are doing, you can't tell when you are doing it. Pendulums really work. Many Japanese tell the sex of unborn babies by the use of a pendulum. They use a gold ring suspended on a piece of string or thread, and it is held above the stomach of the pregnant woman. The direction or type of movement indicates the sex of the child yet to be born. Incidentally, many Chinese and Japanese use a pendulum for sexing eggs. A radio set uses electric current for reproducing sound which was broadcast from some distant station. Television sets use current also for reproducing a rough simulacrum of a picture transmitted from a distant station. So in the same way. 14. If we are going to douse or use a pendulum or anything else, we have first of all to have a source of current, and the best source of current we can use is the human body. After all, our brains are really storage batteries, telephone exchanges, and all that sort of thing, but the main thing is, it is a source of electric current sufficient for all our needs and sufficient to enable us to detect impulses and thereby cause a pendulum to twitch, swirl, gyrate, or oscillate, or all the other queer thing which a pendulum does. So, to work a pendulum, we must have a human body, an alive human body at that. You cannot tie a pendulum to a hook and expect it to work, because there would be no source of current. Nor would it be of much use if we could tie our pendulum to a hook and supply it with current, because the current has to be in pulses varying according to the type of action desired. Just as in radio we have high notes, low notes, loud notes, and soft notes, so with a pendulum we must have the necessary current variation to do the necessary. Who is going to vary the current? Well, the over-self, of course. That is the brightest citizen we have around us, you know. After all, you who read this are just 1/10 conscious, so, knowing yourself, just think how brilliant you would be if you could call in the other 9/10 of consciousness. You can certainly enlist its aid, the aid of the subconscious. The subconscious is brilliant. It knows everything that you have ever known, can do everything that you could ever do, and can remember every single incident since long before you were born. So if you could touch your subconscious, you would get to know a very considerable amount of things, wouldn't you? You can touch your subconscious, with practice and with confidence. The subconscious can also contact other subconscious minds. There are truthfully no limits to the powers of the subconscious mind, and when the subconscious mind is allied to other subconscious minds, then indeed results may be achieved. We cannot just ring up a telephone number and ask to speak to our subconscious, because we have to look upon that mind as being something like a very absent-minded professor who is 15 constantly sorting knowledge, storing knowledge, and acquiring knowledge. He is so busy that he can't bother with other people. If you pester him enough in the politest way, then he may answer your summons. So first of all you have to become familiar with your subconscious. You see, the whole thing is that the subconscious is the greater part of you, the much greater part of you, and I suggest that you give your subconscious a name. Call him or her whatever you like, so long as it is a name agreeable to you. Supposing it is a male, then you could, purely as an illustration, use the name George. Or if it is the subconscious of a female, then you could say Georgina. But the whole point is that you must have some definite name which you link inseparably with your subconscious. So when you want to get in touch with your subconscious, you could say, for example, George, George, I want your help very much, I want you to work with me, I want you to, here you specify what you want, and remember, George, that really we are all one and what you do for me you are also doing for yourself. You need to repeat that slowly and carefully, and with very great thought. Repeat it 3 times. The first time George will probably shrug his mental shoulders and say, oh that pestiferous fellow, bothering me again when I've got so much work to do, and he will turn back to his work. Next time you repeat it he will pay more attention because he is being bothered, but still he won't take any action. But if you repeat it a third time, George or Peter or Dave or Bill or whoever it is will get the idea that you are going to keep on until you get some action, so he will give metaphorical sigh and help. This is not fantasy, it's fact. I claim to know quite a lot about it because for more years than I care to remember I have done just this. My own subconscious is not called George, by the way, but a name which I do not reveal to anyone else just as you should not reveal to anyone else the name of your subconscious. I never laugh or joke about it because this is deadly serious. You are only 1/10 of a person, your subconscious is 9/10, so you have to show respect, you have to show affection, you have to show that you can be trusted because if you do not gain the cooperation of your subconscious then 16. You won't do any of the things that I write about. But if you practice what you are reading, you can do the whole lot. So make friends with your subconscious. Give him or her a name, and be sure that you keep that name very, very private indeed. You can talk to your subconscious. It is better if you talk slowly and repeat things. Imagine that you are telephoning someone on the other side of the world and the telephone line is a bit poor. You have to repeat yourself, you have quite a difficult time making yourself understood. Your listener at the other end of the telephone line is not an idiot for having difficulty in understanding your message, but general communications are bad, and if you overcome the difficulties of communications you can then find that you have a very intelligent conversationalist, one who is far more intelligent than you are. When you are using the pendulum, we will go into that in more detail in a moment or so, you have to keep your feet flat on the ground so that the balls of your feet are in contact with the floor, and then you have to say something like, subconscious, or the name you have chosen, I want to know what I must do to get success at such and such a thing. If you are going to make the pendulum work, will you make it swing backwards and forwards to indicate yes, and from side to side to indicate no just as a human does when he nods for yes and shakes his head for no. You have to get over a message like that about 3 times, you have to explain very slowly, very clearly, and very carefully indeed what you want your subconscious to do and what you expect of the test because if you don't know what you want, then how can the subconscious give you any information? The subconscious won't know either. If you don't know what you want, you don't know when you've found it. We started with dowsing, so let us deal first with what we call the dowsing pendulum. By the way, a little digression. Shall we refer to all subconsciousness as George for the purpose of this instruction? It's such a chore typing out subconscious time after time, so we will just use the generic name of George in the same way as pilots call their automatic pilot mic. So George it is for our collective subconscious. 17. The dowsing pendulum should be a ball possibly 1 inch or 1 1/4 inch in diameter. If you can get a very good wooden pendulum so much the better, or you may be able to obtain a neutral metal one. But for the moment any pendulum will do as long as it is about 1 inch or 1 1/4 inch in diameter. You should get a piece of thread such as bootmakers use for stitching on soles. I believe it's called cobbler's thread. You will need about 5 feet of it. Tie one end to your pendulum which should have a little eyelet on the top for that purpose, and tie the other end to a rod or even to an empty cotton reel. Then wind all the thread onto the cotton reel so that when you hold the small cotton reel in the palm of your hand the thread holding the pendulum is between the finger and thumb of your right hand if you write with that one, but if you use your left hand instead, then, of course, the pendulum will be in the left hand. But first we have to sensitize or tune our pendulum from the particular type of material we wish to locate. Supposing we are going to look for a gold mine, first of all you get a little piece of sticky tape. About an inch long is sufficient, and then you put just a very small piece of gold, scraped from inside a ring, for instance, onto the sticky tape and then just lightly push it onto the pendulum. Then your pendulum has a piece of gold which will sensitize it to that metal, and when I say scrape I mean that even if you get a grain, that will be adequate. When you have that, put your ring, or another piece of gold, between your feet as you stand up. Stand with this gold, such as a gold ring or a gold watch, between your feet and slowly unwind the thread so that your pendulum lowers to perhaps a foot and a half from your fingers. At this point the pendulum should swing in a circular direction, that is, making a complete circle. If it does not do so, lower the thread a little or pull it up a little, the point being you have to ascertain the length of thread at which the pendulum swings most freely for gold. When you have determined that, it may be 18 or 20 or 22 inches or similar, you make a knot in the thread and you write down the exact length, such as knot 1, gold, and then you pull off your gold specimen with the sellotape and pick up your watch or ring, and put a silver 18 article on the floor. It may be a coin or a piece of silver you have pinched from somebody else, but it must be silver. You also put a very fine scraping of silver on another piece of sellotape and put that onto your pendulum. Then you try again to find what is the correct length for silver. When you have done that you make another note such as knot 2, silver. You can go on doing it for different metals, and not only different metals but different substances. If you make a proper table, then you should have great fun prospecting. Generally you will find that in terms of length the first thing to respond, at about 12 inches in length, is stonework. A bit longer thread, and you will get glass or chinaware. Longer still and you will get vegetable stuff. Go on increasing the length and you will get silver and lead, and then a bit further on you will find water. Longer still, you will find gold. Still longer, copper and brass. And the longest will be iron, and iron will be roughly just under 30 inches. So if you want to know what is beneath you, you just stand there and first of all think of whatever metal you are looking for. You adjust the length of your thread to the appropriate distance, and you very slowly walk forward. Again, it is emphasized and re-emphasized that you must tell George precisely what you are doing. You have to tell him that you want to prospect for gold, iron, silver, or whatever it is, and when he senses the radiations will he please swing the pendulum. At all times you must definitely keep thinking very strongly of that which you hope to find, otherwise, if you change over and think of something else, then you won't get it. Apropos of this let me say that if you are looking for antique porcelain, for instance, and you suddenly think of women, then you will get the reaction for gold because the length of thread for gold and for women is precisely the same, and if a woman thinks about men she will get the reaction as if there was a diamond under the ground. That, of course, means that you will be completely misled. It would never do if you got the reaction for a diamond so you grabbed a shovel and pick and dug, but found instead a dead man. It could happen. Now, it is advisable to use a shorter cord pendulum for 19 everyday indoor use. After all, you don't want 3, 4, or 5 feet of thread getting tangled up every day. So when you are indoors use a separate pendulum. The pendulums which can be obtained commercially already have a thread or a chain attached to them, and frequently the chain is possibly 6 inches long, although the exact length varies, but that is of no moment. Suppose you want to find something, suppose you want to find out if a person is living in a certain area, then you sit down at a desk or table, but it must be an ordinary desk or table with no drawers or anything beneath because if you have anything beneath in, for example, a drawer, then the pendulum will be influenced by whatever is in the drawer. You may have a kitchen knife in the drawer. You may have a gold ring or something like that. And the pendulum, no matter how hard you think, will be influenced by the wrong subject. So, sit at a plain table and have within arm's reach some sheets of ordinary plain white paper. Then you tell your pendulum, or rather you tell George exactly what you want. You say, for example, "Look, George, I want to find if Maria Bugsbottom lives in this area. If she does, will you please nod by giving the pendulum a backwards and forwards movement, and if she does not, will you please shake the pendulum from side to side. Then on the right-hand side of the table you have your piece of white paper, and on the top, which is far away from you, you put yes, and on the bottom, which is close to you, you put yes. On the far left side of the paper you put no, and on the far right side you put no, and in the center you put a little X to show that is the spot over which you are going to hold the pendulum. The pendulum, by the way, should be held about 2 inches above that X. Sit comfortably. It doesn't matter if you have your shoes on or your shoes off, but you must have your feet on the floor, not on the bars of a chair. Have them flat on the floor so that the balls of your feet are in contact with the floor. Then you get a map of the area desired and spread it to your left so that you have a white sheet of paper to the right and your map on the left. First you gently take the pendulum all over the area of the map, saying, "Look, George, this is the area of my map." 20. Maria Bugsbottom anywhere within this area? The pendulum is being taken over the map about 2 inches above the surface. When you have covered the whole area, you say, "George, I am now going to start this investigation. Will you help me, George? Will you indicate yes or no as the case may be? Then, if you are right-handed, put your right elbow comfortably on the table and suspend your pendulum by its thread or chain. Hold the thread or chain between your thumb and forefinger, the finger with which you point. See that the pendulum is about 2 inches above the X. Special note here: if you are left-handed, everything will have to be reversed, but for the right-handed people in the majority, well, go by the instructions conveyed above." Having got ready, and making sure that you are not likely to be disturbed, tell George that you are now ready to start work. Look at the map and put your left forefinger along the road on the map where you think Maria Bugsbottom may be living. Give an occasional glance at the pendulum. It may swing idly without any apparent sense, but if you get to where you believe your friend or enemy is living, then the pendulum will definitely indicate yea or nay. It is a good idea to use a small-scale map first so that you can cover the biggest area, but when you get some sort of indication, as if George was saying, "Gee, this is a big area, I need to get closer than this," then you get a large-scale map so that you can with practice locate any individual house. After each test you definitely must replace your sheet of white paper by another. Oh, you can use it for writing on, write letters on it or anything else, but only one sheet of white paper to one reading, because you have impregnated that sheet with the impressions of whatever you are trying to find out, so that if you try to repeat a reading, then the second reading will be influenced by the first, and, well, that's all there is to it. But no, perhaps that's not all there is to it after all, because you've got to really frame your questions properly. George, you see, is a single-minded individual who can't take a joke and is extremely and exceptionally literal. So it's no good you saying, "George, can you tell me if Maria Bugsbottom lives there?" If you ask a question like that, the answer will be yes. 21. Because George can tell you if Maria Bugsbottom lives there, he can. And that is what you are asking. You are asking with a question in that form if the pendulum can tell you. You are not asking if she is actually living there at the moment. So whatever question you ask must be framed in such a way that George is not in a state of confusion. The biggest difficulty about the whole affair is framing the questions so that they are foolproof, so that there are no double meanings to them. In any question, if you say, "Can you tell me?" then the answer will be yes or no to the question of "Can you tell me?" The other part of the question, "If Maria Bugsbottom lives there?" will be unanswered, because the first question will have swamped George's interest. So until you are more practiced at this, how about writing out your questions first and looking at your words to see if there is any way at all in which the question can be regarded as ambiguous or as having a double meaning or is unclear. Let me repeat in big, bold, black capitals. You must be sure of what you are asking before you can pose the question.